Nein, der Treffer wird gegeben! Der Treffer wird gegeben! 1:0 für unseren VfB Stuttgart. 1:0, 25. Saisontor für Segun Girassi. Und jetzt ist Dennis Undaf, der sich auf und davon macht. Geht da schön vorbei. Dennis Undaf. 2:0! Dennis Undaf steht 2:0 für unseren VfB Stuttgart. Der ist torhungrig wie die Löwen in der Wilhelma. Er steht 2:0 nach 16,5 Minuten für unseren VfB Stuttgart. Wir spielen hier schon wieder dermaßen dominant, dermaßen clever und nutzen die Fehler der Frankfurter eiskalt aus. Und da kommt Leveling, der geht alleine auf Trapp zu. Leveling geht vorbei und es steht 3:0 für unseren VfB Stuttgart nach gespielten 37 Minuten. Und jetzt Nummer 18, Jamie Leveling, der das so souverän vorbeigeht.
Welcome to episode 118 of Outbase Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language Outbase Stuttgart fan podcast for reviews. Unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. Like we said, this is episode 118. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. He is Ted. You can reach him at TeddyValFB. We have got a website, ValFBAmericana at Weebly.com. Ted, the big talk in all the Bundesliga this week, which actually today as we record this Sunday, is Bayer Leverkusen, nicknamed Neverkusen, finally got off the schneid and finally got that first championship. I mean, any words of congratulations you want to throw out there to the new Meisterschall?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for getting this done, for pipping Bayern and for not even making it close. I haven't caught a lot of their matches, but I have followed enough of them to understand what a special team that Xabi has built. And so, tip of the cap, nothing bad to say about these guys. They've done it the right way. It's been fun to watch, and I hope they can keep it going in the future. I'm really glad Xabi's staying for at least another year.
Yeah, I think it's a great story of what, like, hard work, talent, good coaching, good players, and just like Wrexham, who got promoted in the English league, having a millionaire owner and a billionaire corporation behind you. Just what a plucky team they can have with all that success there. So no, but seriously, shout out to those guys for that. Part one shout outs, ValBay Bingo. Dan O'Hagan and Sean Dundee nailed it. So they got our fourth ValBay Bingo this year. That took them to all the end, but they did. So congratulations to those guys. Pod predictions. Thankfully, Matt and Austin have stopped sending in their predictions. So I have caught up a little bit, but Jeff is still 12 ahead. He went 4-1-4 this week. OFC Fantasy, Lucas Stott won the week and leapfrogged Village Footy. So they're in first with Doug in third. Give Village Footy a listen on the YouTube. They're great. Shout out to Doug, by the way. He had another watch party in Youngstown, and they are now 3-0 in their last three. And OFC Tip Spiel, Stefan and Kai got 22 points on their predictions this week. So they rocked it. So they're still 1-2. Any comments on any of the predictions there, Ted?
Well, kudos to Doug. I love that we have the Youngstown chapter. I love that they are 3-0. All I would ask is we need you to host 5 more watch parties that this year, Doug. It's very simple. We need you, and thank you. As Doug wisely pointed out on Twitter today, if we win 3 more, then we are guaranteed a Champions League spot. So, Doug, we can dial it back, but we need you for 3 more, please.
You can tell Doug is the computer tech teacher and I'm the history teacher because I couldn't figure out the numbers at all, but he figured it out right away. Speaking of numbers, the ValBay Frauen, they took care of TV Derendingen 1-3 on the road, and SC Sand scored a 92nd minute winner to stay within 2 points. Darn it. Unfortunately, the U21 team drew to Mainz's second team 1-1. So it's looking pretty bleak for them to get promoted, as the Kickers and Hoffenheim are about 7 to 9 points ahead of them with about 7 matches to play. This is big for you, Ted, the Valpy shop. They have some new items, a backpack, a keychain, and as a expecting parent, a pacifier. So I'm going to throw you a softball. You've got to get the pacifier, right?
A pacifier, and one of the other new items is a Greifling, like a little, like a grippy toy as well, with a little bell on it. So yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to afford diapers over here, and they are just after my wallet. But yeah, I'm probably gonna have to get both of those.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer there. The shipping for that, I'm sure, will pay for itself in no time at all.
Naturally. Just float them over. They're both made out of wood, handmade in Germany. You know, just please get them to the nearest port city and pop them in the water, and save me the money.
Yeah. And by the time your child's 3 or 4 years old, it'll probably show up if the shipping is how it gets to me here. The former Valve Beers, Gildy Oz, played 14 minutes in a draw. Juan Pereira played 18 minutes in a loss to BSC. Omar played 70-some minutes in a loss to Galatasaray. I believe that's how you say it. Mo Sanko played 70 minutes in a loss in the Dutch League. A lot of losing going on. Luca played 30 minutes in another Darmstadt loss. Those guys look to be done. Castanares, though, got 14 minutes in a win over Munster. You brought up a good point. So one of the new things we should probably bring up is future Valbear. So we got a couple guys that we've signed already to next year on the free, as it turns out. Did you pay attention to any of these guys? Yannick Keitel, Nick Voltemad, and Justin Deal, unfortunately, from Cologne, is hurt. So he's not playing right now.
Well, I did see that both Nick at Werder Bremen and Yannick at Freiburg got playing time. Yannick got quite a bit. Right. And both of them have been playing a good amount this year, which has been fun to see. They're both starting roughly 20% of their team's matches, which for young guys, I'm happy to see. I see these guys as depth players, so it's just nice to see them getting minutes, especially first team Bundesliga minutes. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because Keitel wasn't playing a lot for Freiburg at the beginning. Strike has this thing where he does that. If a guy's going to leave, he kind of leaves him on the bench. But the last like 10, 15 games, he's been playing. He's a 5'11 center back, but he started today in one of the most boring matches I've ever seen. Poor Phil Bonney was just like, oh my God, just end this. And then Nick Voldemont is interesting because he's 6'5". But if you look up his stats on FotMob, good luck, because he has almost no stats. It's kind of weird. Justin Deal is a kid I'm really excited about. I watch a lot of Cologne matches. This kid, I was really surprised he wasn't getting a lot of minutes. Unfortunately, he hurt himself, muscle injury, so he hasn't played in a bit, but excited to have those guys. What I'm very excited about is, you know, Ted, our next one is Pod Beverages. I am having I'm almost embarrassed to admit it. I am having a traditional beer. Maybe that'll make it sound better. I'm having a Hams beer right now. If you don't know what Hams is, it says it's from the land of sky blue waters. It's been around for many, many, many decades, and it's probably going to taste like that as soon as I start imbibing on it. But it's beer, it's cheap, it's not bad. What about you?
I am doing a Belgian IPA from Brasserie de Achouf in Belgium. So it's got, I love their visual artistry. They've got a little lawn gnome basically on it. So it reminds me of Matt's tales of his travels around East Germany and seeing little gnomes all over people's lawns.
God, you're such a hipster, you and your fancy beer. Mine comes, yeah, in a blue can. So there you go. That's as good as Milwaukee's going to get right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, where are these sky blue waters? Where is this? What's the provenance of this beverage?
Listen, I live next to Lake Erie, all right? We take what we can get. It's water.
Blue flaming waters.
Yeah, the land of flaming waters. That's actually a great t-shirt. The OFC man of the match. There were a lot of choices for this one. It was super close this week. So I will throw you four names that got the most votes. So starting from the back going forward, you had Fabi Bredlow, who played great in goal. You had Angelo Stiller, who once again played great, playing more in the midfield this week as opposed to last week. And then obviously the dynamic duo of Dennis and Seiru. Of those four, who was your pick and who do you think everybody else picked?
I went with Dennis Zundov personally. I just thought comprehensively an awesome match from him. One goal, one assist. And honestly, I mean, I think we've come to expect those things out of Dennis, and it's not surprising when he gets on the score sheet, and particularly when he gets an assist. What was more surprising was the number of times that I noticed him when we would lose possession. I noticed at least two times, I think, that he was hassling Frankfurt players like around the center circle trying to win the ball back. So kudos to him. He was just involved in every aspect of the game, and I thought that was really impressive.
You and I were texting during the game about how I got this theory that Dennis Undav is one of those guys that you love him when you're on your team, but I don't know how popular he is to other fans. He had that little shimmy celebration there, and they didn't really show up, but I think the Frankfurt players did not take too kindly to that.
Yeah, what was that? Like a wingless chicken? Like
what? What it was? Seiru was looking at him like, "What are you doing? That's your celebration." But it worked. It looked good. But I was hoping you got this wrong because you're fancy hipster beer. But no, you're 100% right. Dennis got one vote more than the rest of those guys for the man of the match. So, man, speaking of the match, let's dive right into part two. Playing against Frankfurt. We were both super confident going into this one. I predicted 3-0. You predicted 5-1. We were a bit lucky because, as it turns out, Frankfurt was coming in a bit depleted. They had some injuries. They had some guys out because of yellow card accumulations and suspensions. So they weren't playing at full strength. But we were both pretty confident. But our confidence took a step back, though, right? When the lineup was announced and we found out, uh-oh, the guy that we just signed to be our goalkeeper again next year, he's taking this one off.
Yeah, I don't know if he picked up a case of affluenza after signing the new Bayern contract or what. It was nice to see him in the stands hamming it up with the fans and taking pictures and signing kits and all of that sort of stuff. But that was a curveball for me. I did not know that he was going to be missing until 10 minutes before the match.
Yeah, it was funny too, because when he was in the crowd taking selfies, I was like, he certainly didn't spend any of his money on clothes, because it was like a white t-shirt. And later in the match, I wanted to say this for later, but I do want, we'll just talk about it now, is Daxo made his first appearance on the pitch, and he was looking sharp. He was looking cool with the shades. I saw on Twitter, somebody was like, I want that jacket. And it's a $599 warm-up jacket. And the guy was like, yeah, I'm good. I can't do that. Meanwhile, Alex Neubel, who just signed a new contract, is wearing a t-shirt from Kohl's. And you're like, what?
Newsflash, Travis. That may have been a 590 euro t-shirt as well, actually.
Touche, touche. I didn't realize that. Yeah. So Alex was out. So I was a little bit nervous of that. And then I saw that Enzo was sitting. So I don't know what was going on there. I know Enzo was a little sick last week, so that's why he didn't play so much. So I didn't know if some of that carried over. So when it came to the lineup, we had Neubel out, Fabian Bredlow in. Josh is out for a while with his foot injury. So Leo Stereu was in. Enzo was out. Anton was in. It was kind of weird because it looked like we lined up in a 4-4-2 type of thing. If Dennis is in, does that mean Enzo is the odd man out, you think? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
It's a great question, and I almost feel like, is it, yeah, I don't know where to go with that one, because is it him that misses, or is it Leveling that misses? If, I'm not quite sure, because, yeah, you've stumped me on that one. I don't know how that goes. I mean, it did surprise me that Enzo was out. The only thing that I could think of was that it was down to him still being sick. Maybe that's just taken a little bit longer. I mean, he's training with the team as far as I know.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't, because when he came in the match later, he came in to play kind of on that wing side, I think for Chris, if I remember correctly. So it's not that he can't play on that side. It could just be a case where Jamie is playing so lights out the last four or five matches. Plus Enzo was a little sick. So it was the perfect combination to let Jamie play. Sebastian said it at some point, is that this is a great problem to have this kind of depth. He wasn't talking specifically about Enzo. He was talking about a different position group, but yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm so used to seeing Enzo in there and being the creative playmaker, but also being able to play back. But if you're going to have Dennis and Seiru in there, maybe Enzo is the one who sits a little bit, but it didn't seem like they missed him at all, which is always a bad thing if you're a player. So let's look at that first half here. And we got a lot to break down because the first half of this match was significantly different than the second half of this match. So we've got the Seyrou goal. You've got the Dennis goal. You've got the Jamie Nutmeg. Which of those do you want to start with?
I think we got to start with Seyrou, the record-setting goal. Incredible. And great ball. Was it, I want to say Stiller who dropped that one, just lobbed it right to him. Fantastic job of body awareness by Seyrou to stay on size. That was one where I was really surprised when they blew for it. I was like, oh no, I think he's on sides. And then they showed the replay. And before they put the lines up, I'm like, he's on sides. He knew exactly what he was doing there. And it was like, Frankfurt just continued to play that offside trap, which surprised me after they got beat there. But fantastic goal. I loved the celebration.
That was awesome.
Hands of God listens to our podcast. They've got to make a print of that one of him standing in the Frankfurt Ultras fan corner with the corner flag above his head. That was amazing.
That was brilliant there. Yeah, I actually was the opposite. I thought it was offsides because the way the angle was that they showed the line, I thought his shoulder had kind of leaned over a little bit because I couldn't tell the angle. I couldn't tell exactly which way. So I was kind of surprised. It was somewhat appropriate, though, that VAR allowed us this moment to soak in the record-breaking shot, the record-breaking goal. And then they put up the graphic that is crazy. I actually texted this to Jeff, who is the Cologne supporter. When Seyrou was there, he had a really bad run, right? So Seyrou has 70 shots. 35 of them are on target. 25 of them have gone in the net this year, Ted. It's bonkers. I mean, I don't know where this fits in the pantheon of strikers in the Bundesliga, but for this year, this guy, my God.
It's absolutely incredible. Yeah, the statistics that he is putting together, how pitch efficient he is crazy. And I did want to mention, I texted this to you, but if anybody hasn't watched the match yet and is going back and watching the whole thing, it was really great when they were doing the VAR review. They panned to some guy in the Konstadter Kurve who's holding up a massive banner that says, get rid of VAR. They come back and announce the goal. And I'm sure that guy very quickly squirreled away.
Right. Get rid of it next week, not this week. You brought up a great question about, there's two questions you had. I think it was like of the scorers in the Bundesliga in recent history and scores for Stuttgart, you know, where does Seyrou rank? And it's easy to say he ranks number one, but I actually brought this up on Transfermarkt. I don't follow a lot outside of Stuttgart, so I'm going to leave that to you. But when it comes to Stuttgart over the last 10 years, you had Martin Harnik, who we make fun of a lot, but that dude scored a lot of goals for this club. He scored 10 goals in 14, 9 goals in 15. Then you had, Daniel Didavi, the relegation year, had 13. Gomez, when he came back, had 8 and 7. Then Kalajic had 16. And this is crazy. The year we almost got relegated, he had 6. 6. That was our leading goal scorer. Then last year, it was Seyrou with 11. And this year, it's obviously 25. So, I mean, historically, he's obviously the best striker that this team has ever had for one particular year. It reminded me of last week when he missed that shot that Silas had that beautiful pass for. And then watching the shot he had that Stiller passed him for this week, I could see exactly what he was trying to do. He was trying to lift it over the goalie, Kevin Trapp in this case. It worked this week. It didn't work last week, but it's worked 25 out of 75 times. That's what's nuts with this guy. What about you? I mean, the easy answer, he's the best we've ever seen for Stuttgart. Where does this guy rank, at least in a one-year run in the Bundesliga?
Yeah, he is the best we've ever seen. So I think we're all watching in a really, we're fortunate to be watching in this era to see a guy like this, frankly, come out of nowhere and put this season together. I was actually looking back through this because I've been following Bundesliga long enough that I remember some of the, obviously we've all seen the Lewandowski seasons, but like, when is the last time that it was not a Lewandowski and nothing to take away from Harry Kane other than that he's, you know, the top scorer on a a team that's built to feed the ball to him and, you know, is built to destroy souls in the Bundesliga. Kudos to him. It's very impressive. But it feels like a foregone conclusion the last several years between him and Lewandowski that the Bayern center forward is going to be the golden boot winner in the Bundesliga. And it's like, you go back to I think it was 2012, 2013 that we had like Stefan Kiesling for Leverkusen had 25 goals. If you don't remember him, basically the German version of Peter Crouch, tall, skinny, awkward, somehow put in 25 goals for Leverkusen. Klaas-Jan Huntelaar with Schalke the year prior with 29. And Grafitsch with Wolfsburg in 08-09 had 28. So we go back over a decade, really, to get to a non-Bayern player who's put together a season like Seyru. And it's 25 goals and counting. And if you factor in, so 25 goals in 29 match days, plus he missed 6 matches, I want to say, through injury in AFCON.
Yeah, he's
like
more goals than games played. I don't have the exact number, though, but you're right.
So if we figure he's going to score and, you know, another, if he continues at a goal a game clip, he gets to 30 by the end of the season, which is mind-blowing.
This is going to sound like homerism, and it probably is. Like, Harry Kane is amazing. Lewandowski is amazing. But I think what's interesting about Seyru is not just his efficiency, but I think it's 10 or 11 goals that he has scored, the opening goal for Vape. So his goals aren't coming in 5-0 wins or in 3-0 wins. He's not just poaching goals. That's nothing to take away. A goal is a goal. You know, I'm not going to, you know, criticize that, but his goals are legit. And it's just wild that he's putting this stuff together, and he could have had another goal in this game, but for Dennis. So then Dennis gets a turnover around, gets a turnover around the 17th minute, and he could have passed to an open Seyru. One of my favorite things about Seyru is he does that thing when he's open where he kind of puts his two hands like, yes, exactly. Puts his hands. Nobody can see this because we don't do video, but puts his hands down there like almost a reverse prayer for you to feed the ball to him. And Dennis is like, no. And had he missed that, I'm sure Seyru would have, you know, punched him, but he put it in. He's so confident. Then we had the little shimmy shake celebration. He has the most goals from a German who is in his debut season in the Bundesliga since our friend Sean Dundee back in the 90s, even though he did it for Karlsruhe, but we'll forgive him for that. But this guy is just playing with confidence. He's playing cocky. He is singing the Euro Pokal song just like the fans are. I don't know if they're going to build a statue of him, but he's getting pretty close to getting free beer whenever he's in Stuttgart.
I mean, think about this. If this is last season's top scorers in the Bundesliga, Füllkrug and Nkunku shared it with 16 goals apiece. So Dennis last season is up there as top scorer in the league. And my second takeaway from that goal was, yes, Seyru was like, feed me the ball, man. I got this. I got an open net. But as soon as Dennis nets that, Seyru wheels around and just has a massive grin on his face and sprints over to Dennis. And it's like, these guys are not, they're not playing at the expense of one another. They're not spiteful of each other. I hesitate to even say it's a friendly rivalry. These guys are just, I think they realize maybe what a special season it is and what positive energy is in the team. And they just seem to be having such a great time together. And I love to see it.
That's one of the things that we'll talk about later is about, obviously there's questions about who's going to stay, who's going to go. And one of the things that Captain Anton said is like, there's just such positive energy on this team. Why wouldn't you want to stay? That's going to play a role in these guys' decisions. I don't think he's predicting that they'll both stay, but I do think it is hard to leave a place that you're really comfortable. And that's one of the questions that we want to ask Sean Dundee at some point is, he played for a team that almost got relegated. Then he played for a team the very next year for Stuttgart that finished in second place. What is it about that just magic season? Because it is clearly magical right now. They're having a good time. They're having a lot of fun. One of the other guys who's having a lot of fun is Jamie Leveling, who I loved his quote. So he gets a great pass for Dennis on a breakaway. He's got one-on-one, and you can tell he messes up the final touch, but he's able to toe poke it and nutmeg Kevin Trapp, one of the best goalies in the Bundesliga. And he said later, Jamie Leveling is like, I've always wanted to nutmeg a goalie. I was able to not make this goalie. I didn't mean to do it, which is why I'm even more happy that it happened. So, I mean, Jamie Lovely, we talked about this last week, was on the Chris Furyk train about how we were questioning this guy a lot. And it's just a case of how we don't know what we're talking about, that Honus is doing a great job developing these guys. And he is the Jungenvild poster child for if you give somebody with talent an opportunity and you allow them to grow, you're going to find out if they can play. And we have found out that Jamie Leveling is probably a guy that we're hoping to be able to buy the purchase option from Union Berlin, because he is becoming such a key player that maybe he's taking Enzo's spot, who we think is a key player too.
Yeah, maybe taking Enzo's spot, or at least allowing Seb to split those minutes. And, you know, if we think back to some previous seasons or even earlier this season, the guys who we were bringing off the bench as substitutes, it's like when you're going up against a Bayern or a Dortmund or even Leverkusen this season, you see the players that they trot off the bench and you're like, holy crap, that's terrifying that they can bring in this dude. Like, you're bringing in Marco Reus as an 80-minute substitute. Like, come on, that's crazy. And we look at our guys and it's like, okay, yeah, he doesn't really probably threaten the opponent. But now we've got guys like Enzo coming off the bench. Silas is a terrifying sub when he comes on to a large degree. And I think that keeping Jamie around also solves the issue that we're in. A lot of us are anticipating anyway of Chris potentially leaving in the off season. So I think he feels like a really important guy to me for us to keep around.
Yeah, he's strong. He's got pace. He seems to be figuring out the nose for goal a little bit here. So the best news is there was tons of ice packs at the end of that match. All those guys, as much of a very comfortable game that it was a physical game. And there was a couple guys that looked a little banged up. But news came out today that both Dennis and Seiru, who had a lot of ice on them, if you notice, Seiru was limping around a little bit. He had a Charlie horse is what the report was. So they're fine. They're good. They should be good for the next match against Bremen there. So before we move on to the defense, Matt, Ted, any final thoughts on, you know, what we just saw in that first half in particular on the offensive side?
I'm curious to know, so of those three goals, which one was your favorite? Do you agree with the Seiru pick, or do you have a different favorite? I mean, Dennis, that was all body. Like the way that he won that one. Do you like that, the way that he won that ball and you know, just went barnstorming down there? Do you like Jamie's crazy, you know, running so fast he almost loses the ball, but you know, his hair's on fire and he nutmegs him? Or do you go Seiru too?
If I was ever going to score a goal in professional soccer, it would be Jamie's goal, right? It would be completely lucky. So I do have a soft spot for that. It's Seiru's goal. The way that he's able to just place that ball in a spot that can't be stopped. I think a lot of Dennis's goals are somewhat lucky goals, actually. I think there's a lot of it. If you look at that goal he had, it kind of went between somebody's legs. You've got to put the ball on target, which is what Dennis does really well. But I think if you look back at a lot of Dennis's goals, there's a little bit more luck involved than what I think with Seiru. And I say this as a guy who thinks that of those two, we're going to try to make a big dive for Dennis, because I don't think we're going to be able to keep Seiru. And I think Dennis is kind of a key to our offense. So I say that as a guy who wants to keep Dennis and thinks he'll be a key to what we do next year. But he reminds me a little of a Thomas Mueller, where it's just kind of, he's in the right spot at the right time, puts the ball on target. And you're like, how did that happen? How'd that go in? And it kind of happened again there. But the Seiru goal was just flipping gorgeous. Everything that guy does is amazing. His celebrations are amazing. Everything about him is amazing. And what made this game even more amazing is that the second half was a snooze fest. It was Sean Dundee and Dan O'Hagan were trying to think of something to talk about. I only remember one chance that we had. Dennis missed one wide there a little bit. But I do want to give a little love to the defense. You got Leo Sergio, who came in for his first start. I thought he had a really nice move. A veteran move on a Frankfurt breakaway where he kind of edged the guy out. A lot of love for Fabi Bredlow, who is just a perfect number two. I thought he played really well from his feet this match, but he blocked the ball with his face. He unfortunately stopped a Stuttgart breakaway because I don't think he could breathe. And obvious love for Valdi Anton. He just had monster tackles when we needed him, which wasn't much, but that guy is so focused and so on fire. I mean, those three guys just played so well on the back end. I mean, got to get some love for the defense because we're giving a ton of it for the offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Valdi probably stopped two, maybe three would-be shots on goal from amazingly timed slides where he just managed to get in front of an absolute missile hit from a Frankfurt attacker. So massive respect to him. Great to see Stergiou in the first start. I thought Stenzel, from a game minutes perspective, experience in the Bundesliga and positional perspective was going to be the guy to start there at right back. So Stergiou surprised me. But that said, I feel like he earned it with his second half minutes against Dortmund last week. And I wonder if Seb was like, hey, let's play the hot hand here. This guy, you know, he looked really good there. And then totally agree with you on Fabi starting the offense from his feet. You know, that he was playing a lot like Nubel does in terms of keeping it at his feet and making that slow pass out of the back, standing with the ball, waiting for a Frankfurt player to force him to get rid of it. And we've given a lot of credit to Alex for being able to play like that. If it were me, it would be terrifying to that pressure. But for Fabi to come without a lot of game minutes and have the confidence to do that really, really impressed me.
That's the thing I was most worried about this match, to be quite honest. It wasn't Enzo sitting. It wasn't what Frankfurt had or didn't have. I'm just so comfortable with Alex in the back starting the offense. And I just didn't think that was what Fabi could do. And he looked good in that match. And he had a really nice save on an Omar Marmoush free kick, you know, there towards the end as well. We got lucky on one particular play where Leo and Anton and Fabi were kind of all there together. And it didn't go in, so that was good. So it's awesome that he got a clean sheet. I don't think we can leave talking about the defense without talking about Mr. 100 match, Ottakar Azor. I mean, that guy is just, he's solid, solid, solid.
Yeah, he's, I think Matt always says something to the effect of, you know, the best defensive performances oftentimes are the ones you don't even notice. And I feel like Atta has so many matches like that where he's not the star guy who's creating the big plays, who, you know, is dropping the pass from midfield like Angelo Stiller can do that leads to the goal. He's really quietly putting in the hard work to do the things that are integral to winning a match like this and to keeping a clean sheet too, just gumming up the works in the midfield. Ricky Palm, I saw on Twitter, was giving him a lot of respect for the match that he had and said something to the effect of, I don't know that he missed a pass or lost a duel in this match. And I think I was looking at the stats. I think he might have misplayed one pass, but that was it. So kudos to him. Quietly, really, really important guy for this team.
And that's the thing, I think, going back to your Stenzel comment, is you need the superstars, which we have, but you need the glue pieces, which we have. So you got a guy like Pascal Stenzel, who's just happy to come on for 10, 20 minutes, obviously wants to play more than that. You got a guy like Leo Stergiou, who 3 weeks ago, I think there was a lot of talk, at least among the fans, about this guy is, we're not going to renew his option or his loan. What's he done? I would argue we need to keep this guy now for the depth and all the matches we're going to have next week, next year. So I think that's one of the cool things, is we've got the stars, but we've also got the glue guys like Atta. And watching him and Angie Stiller play next to each other, it's just, those guys are so smooth, and it's so amazing how quickly they were able to kind of figure things out, which is just amazing too, because as we move into April, we've got 6 points now, Ted, out of 6 points. We got the win against Dortmund, we got the win against Frankfurt, which is big because Leipzig and Dortmund both won earlier. So they were catching up to us. But as it stands right now, we're still in third place on par with Bayern Munich, everybody. 63 points. We're still 7 points against Leipzig, 7 points against Dortmund here. And that's it, folks. It's a three-team race, and we've got Bremen coming up. We talked about it last week. Dortmund has to play Bayer Leverkusen and Leipzig still. So those guys are going to kind of drop some points. I like what Valdemar Anton said after the match. Quote, today we achieved one of our objectives by securing qualification for the Europa League at the very least. Above all, the fans deserve that. They carry us through the season and have done so for years, end quote. So he acknowledged two things. One, we have officially qualified for Europe, everybody. We're playing next year on Paramount Plus somewhere. So get ready for some Tuesday, Wednesday matches here. He mentioned the fans again. They were loud. We had a protest, you know, after halftime. But he mentioned two things I think are very important. We've achieved the goal that none of us thought was possible, which is playing in Europe, and the support of the fans and the crowd. I'm curious, Ted, if we'll see a pitch invasion after the Gladbach match, when it's all said and done, that we've qualified for hopefully Champions League, just like we saw in Leverkusen today. So final thoughts on what Valdi said, final thoughts on the match. I mean, we haven't lost a game in forever. I think you and I are becoming impossible to deal with because we don't know how to lose. These guys are just winning all the time.
11 games unbeaten. Awesome.
I can't. Right. We should just do the dead radio silence here and just let that sink in, because we've gone almost 3 months without losing a match, everybody.
Yeah. What's the podcast equivalent of a mic drop with us not being on screen? Do we just cut it off now?
Literally dropping a mic. Probably. We've probably done that before.
So the other thing is, you know, the players have, I think it was Stiller maybe said it after the Heidenheim the Hoffenheim loss, I think earlier. Someone else said it. I think Dennis was hypercritical after the Heidenheim draw most recently. Both of them used the term arrogant and said that they felt like that the arrogance of the team was what caused those kind of, you know, second half collapses.
Yeah.
Do you feel, having watched that second half, seeing that we didn't give up a goal, but kind of did allow Frankfurt, frankly, back into the match, did you see any of that arrogance seep in, or do you feel like we played a different second half?
I think that's a great question. I think the third goal shows that we didn't play arrogant. I think what I like about this club, and among a lot of different things, is that they seem to show growth and development, not just individually, but also as a group and as a team. And I think Valdi said at one point is that they're critical of each other, but it's in a constructive way. And anybody who's been in a team sport, or actually has been in any kind of team, whether it's work or whatever, knows there's different ways to send messages. Some are critical and they're constructive, and you're like, okay, I can learn from that. And others are critical and you're like, whoa, this is a personal slam against me. These guys are in such a good state of just everybody's on the same page that it's obviously constructive. I thought they were hungry for more. I mean, I think they were playing more counterattack in the second half and kind of letting Frankfurt into it. But I didn't see the arrogance that I saw in the Heidenheim match or the Hoffenheim match earlier in the season at all. What about you?
Yeah, I would agree. I think Frankfurt could have scored a goal, but I didn't see any way they were going to get back into the match and get to parity or get to a win. We weren't out there stepping on necks in the second half necessarily. I don't think we had a chance to get to my 5-1 score prediction, unfortunately. But it was nice to see us not let our foot completely off the gas. And I think you're right. It's a lot of players looking around, seeing that other guys are hustling and knowing that they've got to hustle for their buddies out there.
Yeah, I think Frankfurt's a proud club too. So I think they got a little grittier in the second half. And so we kind of responded to that. But it was a great match. It was a great result. So everything's looking up for us. We still had some black smoke though, Ted. So we still had some drama. So let's move into part three, some news and some cues. All right, welcome back to part three, news and cues. And if you've listened to this podcast at any time in the past, you know that we indeed take a 10-minute break in between parts one and two and parts three and four here. So, Ted, while we were taking our mandatory Zoom break, because we can't afford the actual upgrade, I was looking up number 12s, because this is your 12th episode with us as a co-host. And it's wild. I was going to throw some names at you, but there are almost no players who have worn number 12 for VFB. Nobody's worn the number since 2014, as it turns out. And I'm looking at Transfermarkt right now, and there's names like Rocker, Stoltz, Langer, Gerber. There's nobody, and I don't mean this in a negative way. These guys are obviously professionals. Now, Fritz Walter, who scored over 100 some goals, 20 goals for VFB, he was wearing number 12 for one season, and then as soon as he could, he switched to number 9. So Does number 12 have anything near and dear to your heart? Because ironically, it's my favorite number. And so I think this is a sign that they're waiting for me to come out of high school retirement and suit up.
Is the Gerber that you mentioned, is that Heiko Gerber?
Oh my gosh. Let me go back to the transfer mark here. So we've got Benedict, Michael. It is indeed Heiko Gerber from 2000 to 06. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going him. He was part of the team when I first started rooting for the club. So I go Heiko Gerber. That is at least a familiar name. The rest of them, aside from Fritz Walter's one season, I have no idea who those guys are.
I'm looking him up. Heiko, great name, by the way.
Yeah.
Played for Valpi for those from 99 up to 2007, actually. Won the championship with the team. Wore number 12 the entire time. Then he started his career at Bielefeld, which doesn't exist. If you've listened to us in the past, you know that Bielefeld is a city that doesn't actually exist. So I don't know if he actually existed for Valpi. I think I'm going to have to call BS on you on this one.
We'll ask Sean Dundee next time we see him, because Sean would have played with our friend Heiko here.
Oh boy, he's part of the conspiracy too. So let's get to the news and cues. All right, the drama continues. So quick recap: we talked about this the last couple of weeks, but it's still an issue. So a reminder that the Curve called for the EV to resign. So if you don't know who that is, that was Wright Mueller, that was Adrian, and that was Vogt, kind of the members of the EV, to resign from the AG, the group that runs the actual soccer club. They all refused, but Wright Mueller actually resigned a few days before the Frankfurt match. And now when we have a meeting in July, they're going to have to find somebody through election to fill his spot. There wasn't much in the way of protests. They actually waited until the second half started, which I thought was kind of nice, actually. I thought that actually played into our hands. But I did read that there were some protest signs that were personal about Adrian, about Wright Mueller, and about Vogt that were not allowed into the stadium. So this is a developing story as times go on. You mentioned it last week that the Dortmund supporters actually put something in the crowd about our 50+1 and how they supported us with that situation. So I don't know if we have much to add here, but any comments on any of that?
Yeah, not much other than to say, I don't know if the Frankfurt celebrate or the Frankfurt flares in their crowd were, if that was simultaneous choreography between ultra groups, because presumably the club's going to get fined for that, knowing how the league approaches pyro displays. So I don't know if that was coordinated with Commando Konstadt or any of our guys, or just trying to boost up their team at the start of the second half, but it was simultaneous.
I do think it's odd, like from an American perspective, flares are kind of bizarre. I have to be 100% honest. Any people in Europe that are listening to this, we don't get that. That makes no sense to us, because we can't even walk in to a stadium with a bottle of water, let alone a pyrotechnic. The thing, I've gotten used to that though, but launching rockets in the air, that weirded me out. I was really like surprised that they started the match up even when a couple rockets were still going. I wasn't comfortable with that.
That was crazy. You and I would be kicked out of our Bengals and Browns stadiums for life.
Yeah.
If we did something like that.
Yeah, that was nuts. But I guess, you know, there they just kind of winked and like, oh, well, the fans are being fans, so let's move on. Speaking of fans, so the arena is finally completed. So now all 60-some thousand seats are open for people to go to, and they've got the new locker room. And they've got the new tunnel club. So I don't know if you saw some of this stuff on Twitter, Ted, but the locker room looks sweet. It looks really sharp. The tunnel club is weird. So what it is you pay an exorbitant amount of money. It's somewhere between 500 to 1500 euro, I believe, which is crazy considering you can get a ticket for about 50 euro, I think. And you're on a one-sided, one-way mirror. So you can see the players walking to the arena, to the pitch. They can't see you. So you get this kind of insider view of it. And the reviews on Twitter, at least, weren't very positive, because you're like, this is like looking at animals in a zoo. It's really weird. So the cabin, the locker room looked amazing. I got to give super huge kudos to that. The tunnel club is kind of weird, and I can say that because I would never be able to afford it anyway, but do you see any of that on there?
I haven't seen it yet. That is that's an odd description of the tunnel club. I'm not too keen on that, especially since, as we both experienced in Austin, you don't have to pay money to necessarily even get that sort of proximity to the team. I feel like they do a great job of breaking down those barriers and between club and fans and players and fans. So that just seems like the weird move of a sycophant to pay that sort of money to do that.
It's an interesting thing because I saw somebody put on Twitter, the positive is that if you have X amount of people that are willing to pay that much money, that's over, I think it came out to like $2 million in extra revenue over the course of, 18 matches or whatever. On the flip side, those are fans and supporters that aren't rushing to get back to their seats when the game is starting. And if you notice in this game, there were some empty seats that you notice, you see this in the NFL a lot. As people are out getting concessions and stuff like that, people aren't racing back. So it is a little bit of a weird thing, but it's finally completed, so that's good. And we'll get to see them host the German national team this summer, so that'll be cool. Alex Neubel, we mentioned this earlier. So the rumors that we talked about last week, you heard it here first, folks, because we copied it from somebody else, were true. He signed a 5-year deal with Bayern, and they loaned him back to Stuttgart for 2 years, although it can be cut back to one. I think this is enormous. I think this is huge. I mean, what say you?
Completely agree. Gives us another year or potentially two to to bl bled or whatever you said. Like, I don't know. I'm in Kentucky. I'm trying to use horse racing terms. I can't remember what they call that when you're trying to get a young new racehorse ready. Clearly a transplant here, but gives us the opportunity to do that sort of thing with Dennis Simon. Sorry, this Belgian beer is 9%. I don't know that I mentioned that. This is the equivalent of five hands.
Talking about, humans and breeding is always a good way to start and end a podcast. So this is going well. And you are correct. This hands is like 1%. I think it's negative alcohol, what I'm drinking now. Speaking of players, Seyru and Dennis. So after the match, sporting director Fabian Vogelmoot said, quote, "We've been discussing this for 2 years now. These are two change periods that Seyru stayed in each one. If we reach the Champions League now, maybe he'll think about it again," end quote. He said that discussions are taking place in the background. They're doing their best. Dennis Undav actually added in because they've been asking him about this. He said, quote, "It's going to be a long summer. Let's see what happens," end quote. He has mentioned that he's very comfortable in Stuttgart. And this is where Captain Anton had his quote. "We have an incredible team spirit here. I don't think it's easy to leave this behind." This is something we're going to be talking about all summer. We actually have a question about this when it comes to depth and all that stuff. It's crazy because I think you see this in NFL in particular, where guys only get really one opportunity to have a free agency period. So you don't know how the NFL works. You're drafted, and basically that team owns you for somewhere between 3 to 5 years, I guess it is. And then once that's up, you can actually shop yourself. And I've read that it's a very empowering moment for a player because for the first time, you actually have say over what your career is going to look like. I believe that's where Dennis and I believe that's where Seyru are at, is that really for the first time, they are top market value. They can go almost anywhere they want to go. And that's got to be intoxicating. And that's got to be just really fun, especially when you're talking about the season that they're having on the team as well as individuals. We could talk about this every single episode, so I don't know what we can add to this, but I think they're in a really interesting situation. The club's in an interesting situation. I don't think there's gonna be any resolution to this till July, August.
I agree with you, and I think it's important that we as middle-aged men remember these guys are 27 and 28 years old. And if we really stop and think about what decisions we would make if we had opportunities to make, let's be real, life-changing amounts of money at that age, if your brain doesn't even completely develop until you're 25, are you really in a position at 27 or 28 to make a smart choice about, the importance of a massive bag of money versus the importance of, you know, having a great time with good friends for another couple of years, you know, forging some lifelong friendships, maybe. I don't know for what Dennis's situation is. I know Seiru has a family, has kids, at least one, I believe. I know he celebrated a goal by popping a ball under his shirt earlier and sucking his thumb. So I don't know if he's got another one on the way, but that changes the calculus. So that's my two cents on it, is I'm not going to be butthurt if Seiru ends up leaving at the end of this season because we can't pay his wage bill. Again, he will have had a historical season with at least 25 goals, and I can't fault the guy, whatever he chooses.
We mentioned a long time ago, Ricky Palm mentioned it too, is let's just enjoy the ride, guys. Let's just enjoy the ride. After everything we've been through, let's enjoy the ride. I think there's an actual song they sing about it every game. If you're not sure what song we're talking about, just pay attention to a game. And after we go up 2-0, they always sing about a trip after a lot of shit that we're going to Europe. So, yeah, whatever those guys decide to do, they decide to do. I think it does put the club in an interesting spot. They're in an interesting spot. The last thing we got here is Fabian Vogelmoot might get moved up to CEO. I think we talked about this last week, but it's starting to become more of a thing. And Christian Gettner could be, as rumors hold, the new sporting director with the help of a transition manager. I don't know where the club's coming up with all the money to pay all these people to do random jobs, but I saw some stuff out there, and it's weird because Christian is associated with two relegations and kind of the dark period. And so they had a lot of the legends back for the opening of the stadium and the new tunnel club and the new locker room. And Christian gets a lot of heat, and I get it. It's like when you were part of an era that didn't go bad, you take some of the blame for that. Part of me is like, I don't know if it makes sense for Christian to be in charge of getting players because he has absolutely zero experience. Part of me is like, well, you got to figure it out at some point. And Fabian Vogelmoot is there to kind of hold his hand. So maybe that's where the learning curve comes in. I do think it's kind of weird that a team that could be in the Champions League is going to throw a rookie into that position. So I don't know. I've got a Christian Gettner jersey. All right. I like the guy. I know a lot of people don't. I don't know if you're doing him any favors by throwing him in that position and then giving him a transitional manager too. It's like if I'm a teacher and I have to have somebody in my room all the time co-teaching with me, which by the way, I do, but it's not great.
Yeah, I'm surprised by this. And I wonder if this is, you know, the classic, hey, here's a new business card and a new title, but nothing's really changing here. He can change his LinkedIn profile now, but but then again, I don't really know. Fabian Vogelmoot has done an awesome job, so I hope he's not totally, if this does come to fruition, that he's not stepping away from the player acquisition and scouting work that he's been doing, because he is nailing it. So keep cooking, Fabby. Christian, he's just all over the place though. Like when you see him, you know, when you watch a match, you inevitably see him either sitting on the bench or liaising with the fans or things like that. So I think, you know, and if memory serves, I think he was a captain for us. He was a captain for Wolfsburg. So he's got the leadership chops probably. So maybe he's cut out for this. If it's a provisional thing, maybe worth a shot.
Yeah. I mean, if Fabian Vogelmoot and Sebastian Hoeneß are still there, those are the key people you got to keep there. So hopefully that's what happens.
Big training wheels.
Yeah. Quite a bit. So questions here. We only have a couple questions. I mean, all this winning. So people are just like, yeah, let's just, yeah, we don't need to know anything. So Dave,
not even asks, listening to the pod anymore.
You're right. Which, yeah, our numbers probably indicate that. Dave asks, not taking anything away from Dennis Undav's outstanding match, but he had to give the man of the match to Fabian Bredlow, or Bredlow, as he mentioned on Twitter. He proved his value as a backup, seemingly stepping in at the last minute, picking up the clean sheet. He didn't have to stand on his head, but he did make some saves when he had to. Most importantly, didn't make any big mistakes. Just the kind of depth that we'll need next year in the Champions League. This brings up the point of the depth that we're going to need. So do you think it's too soon to start talking about which guys aren't playing that we should hold on to when it comes to the depth for next season? Because we know we have roster issues with Dennis and with Seiru. I think we'll keep one of those guys. We know we're going to keep Alex. Chris, like you mentioned, I agree with you. I think Chris is the big question mark. I could see him going for greener pastures. We've got Wu Yang on the bench. You got Silas on the bench. We got a couple of kids, you know, on the bench. We got old man Genki Haraguchi, who is on the bench every day. I hope he gets in the match at some point. That poor guy hasn't played in a year. I mean, is it too soon to talk about roster depth? Or does this go back to what we just talked about, man? Just shut up and enjoy.
I think there's a bit of both. I mean, I think, yeah, shut up and enjoy. We haven't, as Foul FBA fans, had a season like this in far too long, so we should be happy with it. I think it just depends on your individual bandwidth, whether or not that you've got it within you to be able to also geek out on the roster stuff. I'm sure that the club is already thinking about it. You know, we talked earlier about title and deal and Voldemond, you know, coming into the club. So they're making moves, wheeling and dealing. None of those transfers, I don't think, are official yet, but, you know, all but in name at this point. So I think we should be thinking about it. Yeah. And I think it's fun to, I don't think there's any harm in kind of starting to think about, you know, how do you replace a Seiru realistically with the wage bill that this club can afford and with the transfer fees that we could afford? Who could we bring in realistically?
I think, it's a great point. I think that was brought up earlier by Doug is I think if we win two more matches, I don't think we need three. I think we get two more, I think we're good. I think we're good because I think there's going to be some that Leipzig-Dortmund match against each other is going to kind of give us an advantage one way or the other. This summer is going to be crazy interesting. It always is in the Bundesliga, but this summer I think is going to be even more so, especially if we're in the Champions League, because who we're keeping, who we're losing, who we're gaining, and how we're going to play those hopefully extra eight games. Which guys are going to have to step up? Is the Silas, who's been the forgotten man this year, going to step up and be that guy? Is one of those kids, Raymond, for example, going to step up and play some meaningful minutes? So it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen there. The only other question we have is actually, Ted, from you, is how much more important is nailing your match score prediction on the pod than winning the Bundesliga fantasy or the Tippspiel? And can you please make more generous predictions for all the remaining matches? Ted, since I'm in last place in both of those other competitions, it's incredibly important. So, yes, my 3-0 prediction was spot on, but I have to admit, and you have to admit too, it looked like you were going to win that prediction after the first half.
That was touch and go for a bit. That was touch and go. But you've got the magic touch right now. So yeah, you're making all the predictions from here on out as long as you choose Foul FBA to win.
That is a great segue to part four, our upcoming match. So the upcoming match is, I'm disappointed, we're not the Tippspiel. We're Sunday at 9:30, which is not where we're used to being. We're used to being the game of the day. So I don't know what's going on, you know, ESPN Plus, but you need to shift some things around. We got third place at 12th place. We're fighting for Champions League, and they're in this weird spot. They've got 31 points, so they're 8 points out of Europe, but they're still only 5 points above 16th. But those bottom three clubs are so deep in the struggle bus that you think they're safe. I was talking to the Not Easy Being Green guys who run a podcast about Bremen, and they're just kind of in this malaise of bleh. This season is just bleh. It wasn't any fun because they were just obliterated 0-5 against Bayer Leverkusen today, and they had to be there for the Meisterschaft, you know, the pitch invasion, all that stuff. But they did hold strong in the first half. It was only like a 1-goal lead. In the last 20-some matches, we've got 8 wins to 6 losses to these guys. We had a 2-0 win with Dennis and Seiru scoring early and then late against those guys. Bremen has a special place in my heart because two reasons. One, it was the first match where I actually got in contact with other American Stuttgart supporters. Matt and Rob and I got together because I was watching them get obliterated by Bremen 6-2 in our relegation season. So I was watching that, talking to those guys. Plus, we've got the Not Easy Being Green guys who are up in Canada who do a great job with their podcast. So Bremen has a soft spot in my heart for those reasons. When I say Bremen to you, other than that green emblem and the curvy W, what comes to your mind?
Beck's beer. Mesut Özil, Torsten Frings, and Mario Klose. That's the big four of Bremen, I guess. Never been. It feels like Hamburg Junior, maybe. If memory serves, Bremen is one of those. It's like Berlin, I believe, in that it is a city state. I think that's the free city of Bremen, I believe. So there are 16 Bundesländer in Germany, 16 federal states. Berlin is one that is a city, but also a state. And I believe Bremen is the only other one. I think I've got that right. Hopefully I'm not miseducating our apparently David is listening. I'm listening. We're the only ones submitting questions. So I'm not really doing any harm there, but I think I've got that right. So it's an interesting spot, I think.
I wish we had a video for this because people, you've got to see, Ted has got his notebook and he's got his pen. He looks like Digger Phelps, you know, trying to do a basketball broadcast right now. It's actually quite impressive there. Yeah, I think you said it perfectly. They're like Hamburg Light. By the way, Hamburg, they're in trouble in the second division. They are in fourth place right now and not looking like they're getting promoted. But yeah, when I think of Bremen, I think of more of their rivalry with Hamburg than I do Bremen there. But you know, we've had some pretty even matches, as the record said. Like I said, 8 wins, 6 losses in the last 20-some matches. Predictions for this one. The big – we're on the road, okay? So they just got blown out. We just blew out a team. What do you think the odds makers have this one? And what are you going to be watching for? Because joking aside, we do need this match to keep Leipzig and to keep Dortmund at bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the things that jumped out to me as I was looking back over Bremen's form is they have not won a match since February 16th.
Oh, God.
They have not scored more than a goal since January. So, those obviously not positive trends if you are a Bremen fan. So leads me to feel fairly confident in this one. I think what I watch out for is, you know, trap game. Europe is secured. I get the impression from Valdi's post-match interview, the players are not resting on their laurels. It doesn't seem like they're like, okay, you know, we got Europa League.
Right.
We're where we want to be. I definitely don't think that's where they're at. So, yeah, but I guess if I'm looking for anything to watch out for, it's that it's a road game, you know, against a Traditionsverein. They've got great support. But I feel pretty comfortable with this one. I'm guessing the odds makers, I'm thinking they got us. Oh, well, let's see. Okay, so they got a half a goal being the home team. I'm guessing they've maybe got us by a goal.
They got us by half a goal on this one. So we're half a goal. The over-under is 3, so they think there's going to be some goals in this one. The thing I'm going to be watching in this is that Nick Voldemont kid to see where he's at, how he's played. Because I've seen a little bit of him, and I haven't been super impressed so far. He's only 22, all right? He was born on Valentine's Day, which is awesome. So hopefully it works out. But he's 6'5". I got this weird Luca Pfeiffer vibe with him. And he doesn't play great with his head. He plays better with his feet. So we'll see in person, you know, what he looks like. So I'm going to be watching him for sure. What's interesting is that same weekend, you've got, after our match, you've got Dortmund and Leverkusen playing. So Leipzig plays Heidenheim on Saturday. Heidenheim's basically safe. So I don't know what kind of Heidenheim you're going to see. And Leverkusen could have a legit hangover going into the Dortmund match because they just wrapped up the title. They want to win all the games though. So that's what I'm hoping. So I got a weird feeling there's 3 trap games out there, but not in our favor in this one. So I'm a little concerned going into this one. I think of the 3 clubs I just mentioned, I think we're the most focused though. I will take Stuttgart in this one. I just think the Seiru and Dennis machine is so on fire right now. And even though Bremen tried to play compact today and they tried to play And they had some chances, actually. Leverkusen let them in. I just think we are on such a roll. We have such great offense, and I think we have such great leadership in the back. I think this is going to be a tight one, though. I'm going to say, like, this is going to be a 2-0 result, maybe a 2-1 result for the good guys. What about you?
I think 3-0 us. I don't think, based on Bremen's statistics, I think they're going to have a tough time scoring against us, especially if Nubel is back. And I like our odds of being able to put some past them, given scoring form of late.
Yeah, they've got a minus 13 goal differential. We are plus 33. So that would tend to be, you know, in the right shape there. Yeah, it's hard to say because you're just waiting for the shoe to drop a little bit. Right. It's just, we've been on this crazy run. I think you mentioned earlier, 11 straight positive results. And you're just like, okay, at some point, somewhere, it's going to take a bit of a hit. But the one thing we do have going for us, I think, is exactly what you said. We haven't wrapped up anything yet. So while some of these other clubs might be taking their foot off the gas a little, we still have to push. And I think the other thing that's going for us in a weird way that could hurt us later is we got guys that are possibly playing to showcase themselves. Chris Furyk, perhaps, Dennis, Seyru, like we talked about earlier. So you have those guys that right now, over the next five matches, want to play lights out to show, hey, I should play for the national team, number one, you know, in Dennis and in Maxi and in Chris. But also, hey, show me the money. Cuba Gooding Jr. said it a long time ago. You know, where's that? So I do think we have that going for us here. So I like our positive results here. I like our positive you know, look at how this match is going to go. We're the early match. We'll see what happens. Any last thoughts as we wrap? Really, what has been a crazy positive episode here, talking not just about how the Frankfurt match went, from the Bremen match to how these guys are playing to how great Daxo looks. I mean, what else can we add?
So I've got a closing question for you. So what I was doing during the 10 minutes of stoppage time in our our little 10-minute intermission was I was looking up how the pots for the Champions League draw are determined. Ooh. And so the top ones, so pot one goes to your domestic champions of, I believe, the big five leagues. And then the others are your most recent Champions League winner, your most recent Europa League winner, I think. And then from there, it's based off of the UEFA coefficient. And I was looking on UEFA's website, and it goes through about 500 teams for UEFA coefficient. Basically, if you've played in any of the European competitions at some point over the last 5 years, you end up with a coefficient score in there. And Stuttgart, as we all know, has not played in any European competitions in the last 5 years, unfortunately. So we didn't show up even anywhere in the top 500 or so. So I suspect, anyway, whatever competition we end up in, we're gonna get at least one of the big boys in our group, inevitably. Is there someone that either scares the crap out of you or that you really would be excited to have Stuttgart in a group with?
For me, I don't know what it is about the Italian league, but I am scared to death of playing the Italian league. It's the way that they have traditionally played, very slow down. It's like having to play a Heidenheim and a Bochum and a Mainz over and over again. That's my mindset. Like, I don't watch a lot of Serie A, but that's the way that I always think of the Italian leagues. And that's what Stuttgart has always struggled with in the past, right? Is that kind of thing. So any kind of Lazio or any of those teams, Florentine, I'd be like, oh God. Just for a local perspective, and I don't know what it's like down where you're at, I would absolutely love it if we matched up against Arsenal, just because in the Cleveland area where I am at, there are two Arsenal supporters groups that are pretty large. And so I could just imagine how fun that would be to get together with those guys and just share a Champions League experience. And then talk about Dino Mavropanos and, you know, all that stuff. So for me, it would be awesome to see us in Arsenal from a local perspective, because those are you know, a pretty big supporter group here. What about you? What would you want to see?
Yeah, I would go an English team. I think Arsenal is my number two team, so I would have no there's no question in my mind if those two teams play. I hope that Stuttgart wins 6-0 or more. So I wouldn't have any qualms about playing them. It would be cool knowing if whichever team wins, I can be somewhat happy. There is also a large Arsenal supporters group here.
Okay.
So I would have no problem finding the matches at a bar. I think a Liverpool having a little like a little reunion with Wataru would be cool. Man City. I think, well, Man City, I guess it's a bit of a fabrication in terms of their fanship, in terms of their ability to show out. But like any of the traditional English clubs, like a Man United, a Liverpool, an Arsenal, even Spurs, I feel like they're going to put out fans and have, you know, any of us are going to be able to go to a pub and be able to watch that match, which is exciting. The Italians, scares me a little bit. I think, so they have a, they invented a term to describe what you're talking about. They call the style of play in the Italian league catenaccio, which is Italian for padlock.
So
it's basically just like park the bus, lock it all down. You're not going to score against us. And then if we play Lazio, then there's a little, a hefty dose of fascism on top of it. It's great.
I don't want to see that either. I would like to see, there's a Chelsea supporters group in Cleveland too. So that would be good. So I'm thinking of it from a very selfish perspective of kind of that. I do think, like, if you were an Union Berlin fan, how awesome it was. Wasn't it Real Madrid that they hosted at their stadium? And it took it to the last.
At the Olympiastadion.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah. They couldn't even do it at their own place. It was too small. So I think that would be kind of cool. So just to have any kind of experience like that, hopefully it goes better than, I believe it was Christopher Daum in the late 2000s when we played, I think it was Leeds United, and we accidentally subbed in back then when they had the rule you can only put in so many foreign players. He accidentally subbed in too many foreign players and they had to replay the tie and we lost on the tie. So hopefully that, you know, something like that doesn't happen, but we'll probably end up playing somebody like Wrexham or something like that that somehow magically gets in there and does all that. But you know, during the 10 minutes when we had our break, I was actually enjoying my own tunnel club here in Cleveland. Just, you know, watching, you know, whatever's going on in my basement here. But no, that's a great question. Hopefully, you know, after the next result against Bremen and the next one's coming up, that's exactly the question we get to find out. Because I think that would be really kind of cool for us to, I don't know if they do it like the NFL draft or the NBA draft, where they actually have a whole presentation where they do the draw and you get
they
to
do. See. It's more like the Powerball. Like they're literally, I think there's a little hopper with ping pong balls in there. Maybe we replace them with tennis balls as an homage to the Bundesliga this year. I don't know.
I like that. Yeah. I've had as much luck with Powerball as I'm sure Stuttgart will have with whatever draw they get. So we'll see how that goes. But no, it's been a great season so far. It was a great match this weekend. We got another big game coming up. So Ted, last thoughts. Let's wrap this up here. Any last thoughts, you know, about what just happened, about what's going to happen as we wrap up episode 118?
I'm here for the ride. I'm just enjoying it. I'm looking forward to us having, you know, for the first time in a long time, you know, I'm looking forward to a Bayern match, feeling like we're looking them in the eyes, and it gets me really excited that we have the chance head to head to stab them in the face instead of back on May 4th.
I love Ted having 9% Belgian beers. He's very aggressive here, so that works out.
We can look him in the eyes when we stab him in the gut.
It's so poetic. I love it. Yeah, it's just a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be a Stuttgart supporter. It was a great result on Saturday. So hopefully, you know, travel to Bremen. Today we got another great result coming up. So, man, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Travis.
Most of the Stuttgart fans are going to be tucking into their Mauertaschen with glee tonight. If you're wondering what a Mauertasche is, it's a culinary speciality of this region. Southwestern German dumpling. If it not a fan of Mauritaschen, then always look for Spätzle, which is the southwestern German variety of pasta. I must confess to being a bit more of a Spätzle man myself. But do give the Mauritaschen a try if you come here.